Welcome back to the Camera Shack Podcast. This is episode 10. We are 4 months behind schedule, and I have an immense amount of things to talk. Not a little bit of things, an immense amount of things to cover. So I'm basically going to try to make like, let's see, one episode, probably two, three, four, five, six, maybe seven, maybe eight episodes, all in one night, and we'll see how that works out. I may only make like one or two. So I'm gonna start. We're gonna go back in time, roll back the clock to where we left off. Actually, I went back and listened to episode 9 just to figure out where we were. And I was last talking about tomorrow I was going to the Watcher and Lantern Festival. And yep, I totally went to that. Sorry for breathing the microphone there. So, the Watcher and Lantern Festival. It was pretty actually cool. It happened down in Cincinnati at a park with a... It was like a big... It's not a lake. It's like a... It's a big pond. I would call it a big pond with a water fountain. And so I decided that I wanted to try and take photos there. But I wanted to take photos. I knew it was going to be at dark. I don't know why I covered what I hypothesized, I guess. But so I'm just going to cover what I actually did. Essentially, it was going to get really dark. And the brightest lens that I owned at the time was an F 2.8. So I have a 24-70 and a 70-200 f/2.8. And they're nice lenses, but they, you know, once you kind of get kind of dark, it just becomes too dark. My main, usually when I take photos, I try to stay at or below ISO 4000. And try, if I have to go up to 8000, then I'm going to go up to 8000, but I try not to go up to 8000. And usually aim for about 1/150. I have gone lower than 150, but usually 150 is where I get the most optimal or above. Like there's a good chance not to be blur and stuff like that. So at those settings, you don't really get a lot of brightness once it gets kind of dark. I think like 8 o'clock at the time of July, 8 o'clock. At least that's when it kind of started getting a little too dark. So I thought ahead of time, I was like, but for whatever reason, so I thought at that moment, I was like, oh, I think it was that day. I was like, I should have rented a lens from Lens Rental. Small brain moment. And so I went with the backup. I went to Dodds. So Dodds is a local camera shop. They're about 30 minutes from my house, though, so not really that local. And basically, the only RF lens that I was able to rent from them was an RF 85mm. I can check. Give me 1 second. Let me scroll. I'm looking at the pictures right now on my website, loganrickert.com. You can view them yourself. This is still my 200mm. 1 second, 1 second, everybody. 1 second, 1 second, going forward. 85, it was an 85mm f2 lens. This is a pretty cheap 85mm. It's a macro. I thought the lens itself was okay. It was definitely not as bright as I would want, though. F2 is only one stop brighter than f2.8. Not that great. But I was like, I'll take the one stop. I think it ended up being like $25 to rent it for the day, which isn't too bad. Man, okay, I'm sorry guys, I know I'm breathing in the microphone a lot right here, because I'm holding it, and every time I breathe into it I can feel it, so I apologize for that. Maybe if I do like me, I'm gonna look not at the microphone, and hopefully that's gonna fix that problem. I don't know what my train of thought was there. Oh, so I rented this lens. It was like $25 day of. I was like, this is probably better than f2.8. once it gets really dark. So I'll get into how it performed here later. But we'll start at the top here. So the event started, I don't know, mid-afternoon. I think the timestamp, there's timestamps, but I think they're wrong on the website. It says, what, 5 p.m.? That doesn't sound right, but I think it's an hour off. So I think it was probably 6 p.m. or it's 4 p.m. Doesn't matter. So basically, if you've never been to a water lantern festival, the premise is that there's a giant pond, or it could be an incredibly small pond, I guess, and you basically take like a board, a flat board, and then you take like paper and put it in a box around the square board or around or whatever the board, put it around the board, and you can decorate your lantern, and then you take a lantern, you put it in on the plate, and then push it out to sea, so to speak, and it just kind of floats there, right? So in this case, though, they gave us a, I would say probably about an 8-inch by 8-inch flat, like plywood board, just about plywood, and then it was inlaid with another board that was also a square. That had like a divot in it, so that the premise was that you basically took four little sticks and you put them in little holes at the four corners, and then they gave you a sheet of paper that was one sheet that went all the way around. It was a, I don't want to say a Möbius loop, but Möbius loop folds in on itself. It's just a regular loop, I guess. Imagine a loop extruded up, and then they give you some markers so you could draw on it. And then you just kind of put the four posts in, put the paper around the four posts. And then they gave you a little electronic candle. And, yeah, so then once you kind of decorate it, there's a set point. Once it kind of got dark, then everyone sat down, pushed out to sea. So, took a lot of pictures while I was there. Lots of pictures while I was there. There were several food trucks along the way. And, yeah, let's see. I'm looking at these photos. There's lots of stuff. They decorated them. Looking at these photos, I think 8 inches is generous. It may have been... No, I... We'll say 6 to 8 inches. 6 to 8 inches. Yeah, it was pretty chill. There was some live music there. Some bands playing some live music. Lots of people decorating. Yeah, this segment must be really boring. Sorry to disappoint all of my strong listeners. But hopefully this is exactly what they expected. So as things got darker, everyone kind of got their lanterns on already. They turned the lanterns on, put them in the water, and then pushed off. And right about that time, it was right after sunset. So twilight-ish is when everyone started putting it in the water. And then once the sun had kind of like officially set, I guess nautical twilight, that's when everyone, you know, really set in and started, you know, pushing it off. So it kind of float towards the middle. And right about that time, too, is when I switched over to using the 85 millimeter. So as far as like only having 85 millimeters of focal length to work with, it went well. Luckily, it was a stabilized lens, yeah, I mean, I didn't feel like I was missing out at all with only having 85 millimeters. Like, I didn't feel like I needed, like, to zoom in or zoom out any. Like, I feel like I got a good range of photos across the board. It was definitely not bright enough. So, a lot of the main photos, the majority of the photos, I should say, I took at, let's see, we're looking at 1 of 100, ISO 8000 f2, and because I took them at 8000, they still weren't really bright enough. There's definitely a lot of noise. I think if I had pushed it to, you know, 12,800, it probably, the image would have been more grainy, but I think would have looked better in the long run. But I guess, here we are. Some of the photos I think I did take. I'm scrolling through these. I did not take any slower than 1 over 100. I thought I did take a little slower than 1 over 100, but for the most part, they were all 1 over 100. There were a few that were very close in on the lanterns that I did take at ISO 4000, 1 of 100, and those turned out pretty nice. Here we go. Okay, so some of the last like five or 10 photos, I did take, I took them at, let's see, 1 over 30. That's pretty slow. It's not blurry though. But for that trade-off, I took it at ISO 2000. These are actually some of the best photos that, or at least look the nicest, that were taken at this ISO 2000. Like, there's basically very little grain. They're very clean. But they're also not blurry for 1 over 30. 1 over 30 at 85 millimeters. Handheld, these are actually pretty impressive shots for not being blurry. So that was kind of the experience. I mean, I think in the end, I would have much rather have had a f1.2 over an f2, because that would have been 1.5 extra stops of light. So, for example, right, if I go back a little bit to this image that you can't see, but I'm just going to describe here. So there's an image, it has lots of water lanterns along the edge. And then there's a bunch of people all crowded along the edge and sitting on the edge, like looking out. And it's all like all the candles are yellow. So it's kind of like they're LED candles, but they're yellow candles, really blasting out that yellow onto the crowd here. And I shot this at 1 over 100, 8,000 ISO. So if I had a stop, let's see, 1.5 stops of light. So I could have cut it down for one stop. If I stopped it down to 1.4, I think, that would have been 4,000. ISO 4,000 plus another, it's like 3,000, ISO 3,000. Or what I probably would have done instead is actually cut it to 1 over, so I would have done ISO 4,000, 1 over 150 at f1.2. And I think that would have given actually great photos. I think there's quite a few photos I had to just kind of delete because they were just too dark. And if I brightened them enough to make them even like usably dark, there was a whole bunch of like green grain, like the worst kind of green grain, you know, grain that's like very green and black and just doesn't look good. Like even now at 8,000, 1 over 100, I think some of these last photos that were taken at 8,000, I basically resized them to be like 50%, at least. I think they're at least 50% resized just to remove a lot of that bad grain, but still be usably bright. Let's see this. This is a 1400 by 934, and normally it's 8,000 by 5,000. So, like, 20% scale in order to get a usable image. Now, I will say, I highly doubt anybody would notice that this is only 1400 by 900. I mean, if you put that bad boy on like social media, people are gonna love it. They're like, oh, this looks great. I mean, you obviously couldn't blow it up and put it on a gigantic poster, but I bet you could probably print this. I bet you could print this at 14 inch by 11 inch poster. And you wouldn't go, ah, look at that terrible resolution. You'd be like, oh, it looks like a nice little poster. Probably. I don't know. I've never printed it. So, who knows? But anyways, that was that kind of experience. Had quite a bit of fun. So, hopefully you enjoyed that little review. I'm on the fence. I may go again if they do it next year. I may go back next year. Maybe not. I kind of feel like there's not a lot of variety with the photos. So the only reason I would go again is if I went back and brought a lot brighter lens, like an f1.2. But don't know that I will, because I kind of, you know, even just these photos, they kind of get the same photo kind of quickly. So as far as going again to take photos again, I don't know how likely that is, but who knows? That'll be like a long time from now. So.
If you haven't already, check me out on Instagram at the Logan R. I would really appreciate it if you could check out some of the photos, maybe like a few, and give me a follow. It would really mean a lot. Now back to the episode. So for our little second segment, I'm just going to quickly talk about the new Blackmagic Pocket Cinema Camera 6K G2. For all zero people who care about this, Blackmagic has released a new 6K camera. So it is pretty similar. It now, I believe, it supports. Okay, let's see. So it has an adjustable tilt LCD screen, which is new. Let's see. It does support the viewfinder mount, so you can use a viewfinder with it now, which was introduced with the 6K Pro. It might have. Wow, this is a very informative podcast. It might or might not have a second XLR input. I think it still only has one, but it might have a second one, which is really cool. It's the new old Sony batteries, the MPF570 style batteries. So before they used the LPE6 batteries, and now they're using these NPs instead. So my thoughts, I will not be upgrading. I have a 6K currently, 6K G1, and I'm not going to be upgrading to the G2. The adjustable tilt display, the viewfinder, that doesn't really attract me at all, especially for what I use the camera for. And the only thing that's actually kind of attractive is additional XLR inputs, having two instead of one. That would actually be really nice for being able to do two, interviewing two people at once. I have wireless lapels, but all my wireless lapels are single unit wireless lapels. I don't have any boxes that support two microphones at once, you know, split it left and right. So it'd be nice to have that second XLR input. But it's also using a different battery type, which probably lasts a little longer, probably. But I have a stack of LPE6 batteries because my Canon camera uses that battery. My other Canon camera uses that battery, and my Blackmagic uses that battery. So I have a whole stack of them. And so using a different battery, you know, it kind of throws me through the loop. But I think the number one biggest drawback here for upgrading is that it's still an EF mount. And that would be the only reason. If they came out with a G2 or a G3 that had a RF mount, I would be way, way, way more inclined to pick it up. So until that happens, we're just going to keep it real with the G1. The reason I want the RF mount is because I invested in all RF glass. So I got into my cameras kind of stuff right around the turning point when, you know, RF became attractive. So for me, it didn't really make sense to buy EF glass because, you know, out with the old and with the new, I guess, you know, I was like, if I'm buying glass, I might as well just, you know, most of the stuff is around the same price, give or take. Some of it's a lot more expensive, but a lot of it's the same price, or it's negligible, right? It may be $1,500 for the lens, but if you use that $1,500 lens for 5 years, right? It's like, well, I'm glad I saved $500. It doesn't make any, like, let's say instead of buying a $1,500 lens, RF lens, I bought a $1,000 EF lens. But I basically, you know, we'll just say for $500 less, 5 years. So for $100 more per year, I could have gotten a much superior lens. And that's assuming I only used it for 5 years. And after that 5 years, if I want to sell that lens, the RF will have a lot better resale value at that point, especially than the EF. And so I guess that was kind of my whole idea, right? I figured moving forward, the new Canon cameras, etc., are all going to be using RF anyway. So rather than trying to adapt to all these other stuff, I just went with RF. But a consequence of that is, like, for instance, the G2 doesn't use RF, use EF. So my main thing here is I'm basically going to do one of three things. A, wait until Blackmagic 6K is released with an RF mount. Now, I don't think this is going to happen anytime soon because RF is still very proprietary. They're really trying to hold on to the mount. So I really doubt that Blackmagic is going to get that license to use the RF mount. Option number two, I switch from a Blackmagic 6K to a Canon C70. Now, as much as I would like a C70, I actually don't want a C70. And I can get into that variety of reasons in a different episode. But essentially, I'm pretty happy with the video quality from my current Canon camera, but with the R series, you know. So I don't think the extra $5,000, whatever it might be, you know, and it's bulkier, more convenient. I just think it'd be just easier just to stick with, you know, I can just take photos, I can take videos, I can take photos, take videos, you know, back and forth, and it's just one camera. Whereas the C70 is very specific. Anyways, I was going to get into another episode. Option C is buy a red Komodo. And I'm absolutely not going to buy anything red. But the red Komodo is an RF mount. So that's how we're kind of stuck in this position where we'll probably never see, or many years from now, we'll see it, an RF Blackmagic. I'm not going to buy a C70. And I'm not going to buy a red Komodo. So, effectively, I think my Blackmagic is getting more and more niche. The needs of my Blackmagic are getting more and more niche for me. The longer I own the Blackmagic, and the longer that I use my R series of Canon cameras, they're really kind of a lot more versatile for me than the Blackmagic. They're less bulky. I have way better lenses for them. The stabilization is way better. So, thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you enjoyed, please consider sharing it with your friends. I'd really like to try and grow the podcast a lot more. If you haven't already, check me out on Instagram at @TheLoganR. And until next time, thanks.